Hey guys, I'm Ben. I'm an alcoholic. I don't know. I'm gonna mess this thing up. Joe, that was great. Yeah, I'm really nervous right now. So if you guys don't look at me, I won't look at you. Yeah, my sobriety date is April 23rd, 2013. I have a home group. It's Bill and Bob's Excellent Adventure, and that's at Watermark Church on Saturday nights at 8 p.m. I sponsor others, and I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and I've worked through the 12 steps, and now I'm fortunate enough where I get to do things like this, and it's really uncomfortable, but I guess a lot of times it's the uncomfortable things that are the best for me. I was born here in Tampa, born and raised, spent all my life here except for a couple years. I come from a family that has some drinking issues. I can't say whether they're alcoholic or not, but I know that my grandfather passed away from an alcohol-related death, and I know several family members on my dad's side also had some issues. Fortunately, I got here before that same fate was my own. I was a pretty awkward kid, just kind of like Joe was talking about. I always felt like I had no idea who I was, and I kind of looked towards other people and other groups of people and try to like associate myself with them to try to like figure out who I was. Like, I do things like try to be the wild and crazy kid to draw attention to myself. It made me feel better about like who I was, and I never felt like I had any friends. But people like wanted to hang out and wanted to be my friend. I just always felt out of place, and I'd rather be by myself worrying about what other people thought of me than trying to like get out there. And but I don't know, like I didn't feel like I was born with the right coping skills, man. I didn't feel like I was part of this society. I felt like I was completely different than everyone else, and I was always looking for other things to make me feel better. I can say I'm an alcoholic today. That wasn't the case when I got in here. I didn't think I was an alcoholic. Looking back on it, it took me a little while, and thanks to you guys for being so loving, patient, and tolerant. But like it wasn't alcohol that finally got me into these rooms. But fortunately, I'm here now. So yeah, I'm super nervous. All right, so like I was a real awkward kid, and I always did, like, I never really talked about like what was going on with me. I guess I felt like I wasn't born with those tools. My mom like always jokes around, like she would have to put me in a bathtub to like have me talk about my stuff. And like even when I was like 12, 13 years old, like I wouldn't be talking to her about like what was going on with me. I'd just be like all in my room, all to myself. And she would say, "Do I need to put you in a bathtub?" And like still, when I don't talk to her about things, that's her go-to line. Like, I don't know, like, my way of thinking, my way of, like, processing my thoughts, my feelings, were off from the get-go. Like, my first crush, the first girl I had a crush on, I would, like, sit and I would obsess in my room about her, and, like, I would think about, like, how I'm going to talk to her and how I'm going to build up the courage to talk to this person. So, you know, I flip on the radio and I'm listening to Keith Sweat and I'm writing down, like, all the lyrics, and I'm making my own lyrics, and I'm figuring about how I'm going to go and make my move. So, like, naturally I'm going to call her, but I don't have a phone number, so I'm going to go to the phone book and just go right down the line and call all the people with the same last name. And eventually, I got the right house, and her dad said, "Hold on a second, I'll go grab her." And I don't remember if it was her or dad, and someone said, "Who may ask is calling?" And as soon as that was said, I hung up the phone. I just freaked out. And I felt so embarrassed. But the next day I got to school, and they're like, "Oh," like some of the people at school, some of my friends were like, "Oh, so you called, you know, so-and-so." And I'm like, "Yeah, I did." And just so proud of myself. But, like, I don't know, like, I like that people were talking about me, and I like that, like, people knew who I was, what I had done and stuff, and, I don't know, like, I, sorry, yeah, I'm so weird, But I'm not unique. I know that now. I don't know, man. I always was able to do, like, really well in school. I didn't really have to give it a whole lot of effort. I just kind of, like, paid attention in class for the most part, showed up, took a test, got good grades. I was able to earn a full Scholastic Scholarship to Florida State. I ended up, like, I didn't start drinking until I got out of high school. I ended up getting the full ride, and I went up to school. And from the get-go, man, like, once I got to that atmosphere, like, it was on. Like, I felt right at home with a drink in my hand. Like, I don't know. Like, I was never intentionally drinking to black out. I just liked the way it made me feel. And I felt, like, kind of part of the crowd. And I went and I rushed a fraternity and got into a fraternity right away. And, like, really loved that lifestyle. And, you know, I loved doing that, partying every night and then not going to school every day. And it was great. And I didn't, like, see kind of, like, where my life was heading. And, like, that continued for a very long time. Is that I was so wrapped up in doing what I was doing, I didn't see what was going on. I didn't see the consequences that were accumulating. And I didn't see that, like, I was spiraling, like, more and more out of control. And, I don't know. Like, I would start drinking, and I would just, you know, okay, this, you know, one drink's that, I feel good, let's keep it going. I would just keep going, and I wouldn't stop until, you know, I woke up somewhere strange the next morning. And that was my story pretty much all the time. You know, I don't remember a lot of the funny things looking back that happened in the blackouts, and I don't remember a lot of the horrible things, but there were a lot of both. You know, I would do things like, we were supposed to tailgate at, we were supposed to tailgate for the, or we were camping out for tickets for one of the football games. And I had this big plan of, like, going to the campsite and going and getting, you know, getting tickets with the rest of my fraternity brothers, and ended up drinking all day. And don't even know, like, how it happened, but I end up at the camping site. I wake up the next morning, and I'm just covered in vomit and urine. All I'm wearing is, like, three pieces of pizza where a bikini should be. You know, if you think of, like, Allie Landry and Varsity Blues, just like that, but I was way hotter, you know? I was just a mess, though, man. Like, and I don't know how it happened. I don't know what happened, but you know what? People were talking about me. So, you know, that was kind of fun. And I didn't realize that, you know, they weren't laughing just because it was funny, but I was really a joke at that point. After my first semester, I was on probation for my scholarship. I lost it after the second semester. And once I lost my scholarship, I ended up moving back home. Ended up coming back to Tampa and enrolling at USF, and tried to, you know, stay with my parents because maybe that would, you know, maybe I could hold it together a little bit. But again, like, I like doing what I like doing, and that was the most important thing to me. There was no way around it, man. Like, that's what I wanted to do. So I just used them up and used, you know, anything I could to get what I wanted. And I tried holding it together and continued to go to school for a while, but eventually, like, the classes really got in the way of my drinking. So, you know, I ended up dropping out of school, and, like, I didn't know what, like, the next logical move was, but I knew I wasn't getting, like, any kind of financial aid anymore. My parents weren't really okay with this, so I ended up getting a job, and I figured, like, what's the best place for me to get a job where I can get, you know, what I need on a daily basis, and ended up, like, falling right into the restaurant business, hospitality business. I've been doing restaurants my entire life, but, like, I knew from when I was 16 that those people like to have a good time. And so I slid right in there, and for a while I did pretty well. For some reason, like, I could hold it together when I was working. And, like, I just was able to, like, show up, be productive at work, and then the second I got out, it was on. And it was great because I could wake up every day at 3 o'clock, I could roll into work, make some money, take the money, go to the bar, close the bar down, sleep till 3, you know, and do it over and over and over again. And I did it over and over again for a while. And for a long time, everything I was doing was a party. It was a good time. I have I know I have a love affair with, like, alcohol and drugs, man. I do. Like, there's something about it where, like, even, you know, even now, like, when I see friends that are going out that I work with, I'm like, yeah, have a great time, man. I'd be doing it too. You know, that's like, fuck yeah. You know, excuse my language. If you can do it, like, go for it, man. I know my experience. I know where I came from, and I know where, I try not to forget where I come from. So yeah, like I did this like every day for a while, and I was able to like work my way up through this company, and I did really well. I'd get promotions and different job opportunities, and you know, I ended up, like, my mom would always tell me, like, you have such potential, and I thought that was like such a great compliment. My mom like really believes in me. She says I got potential. Potential is not a compliment. Not in my situation, at least. It just means that I've had lots of opportunities, and that like I've got God-given gifts, and that I'm just squandering them. And like it took me a while of being in here to kind of come to that conclusion. And it's funny because like I was the last one of anyone to realize that I had a problem. You know, it took a very long time. My family knew it well before I did. My mom tried to push me into like go seeing therapists when I was a kid. And I would tell her I would go. I would, like, when I turned 16, she would give me money to go to the therapist, and I'd go there and I'd pick up like a business card or something, and I'd take the money and go get loaded. Like, that was my move. And I don't know, like they were pushing with me from the get go. But you know, I did this. I worked in a restaurant. I was able to like be kind of productive when I was there, and I was able to kind of hold it together for a while, and then pretty soon I wasn't holding it together that much anymore. You know, I ended up, like, when you're in the restaurant business, and like for me, when I'm working in a restaurant and I'm hanging out with buddies, like we'd go to the same bar every single night, so we'd frequent this bar in South Tampa, and this bartender that I was like really into, you know, she would serve us every night, and she saw how much of a fool I was, so she didn't want much to do with me, but I was like really into her, so I kept at her and I kept pursuing her, and eventually like we ended up like dating. And I knew I liked to drink, I knew I liked to party, but like hanging out with her was exhilarating because she did everything I did, but I felt like she did it to the max. And I always used to joke around, like, you know, like, I can't keep up with you. I don't even know how you do it. This is incredible. And, like, I was just awe-inspired by the way this person drank. And I knew she had a problem. You know, that was plain to see. She had an issue, and she needed help. But that was, I mean, that was my road dog, you know. I did everything with her. And, like, the way I describe it even then was, like, we were mutually self-destructive. Our lives just kept getting worse and worse, separately, and we were together, and I don't know, like, she was able to, like, kind of, like, I ended up marrying this woman, you know, and I loved her, man, and I, you know, I loved the times that we had, and I didn't realize, like, how bad we were and how bad we were getting, and, you know, I at that point, I just wasn't ready to get any help, and, I don't know, like, we always used to joke around the way that she drank, the way that she partied, that she'd never live to see the age of 30, and it was a joke, and it's a sick joke, but, like, we'd laugh about it, how she'd never see 30 years old. And then 12 days before her 30th birthday, she was drunk and high, she was driving home from work, and she was killed by a drunk driver. And, you know, the joke was over. You know, I was distraught. I didn't know what to do because, like, I had built my life around two things, my drugs, my alcohol, and my wife. And when I felt like at the time my wife was taken away from me, I lost it, and I didn't know where else to go. So I went even harder into the things that I was doing, and I did it, like, in new ways, and trying to get things, and trying to get, you know, what I needed, like, by whatever means necessary. And I remember, like, when I found out that she died. I mean, I was distraught, of course, but I remember, like, I was like, I couldn't stop crying, and all I was saying was why. And it wasn't why her, and it wasn't why her family, and it was why me. Why me? And I look at that now, man, and, like, that sums it up for me, is everything that was happening in this world was happening to me. And and I lost it, and I didn't want to hold it together anymore. I didn't want to try anymore. I didn't care. I really didn't care. I didn't care whatever was happening, I was going to do what I wanted at whatever cost. And so I continued like down that path. And I started doing like things that I'd never done before. And I started using like drugs intravenously, and I started robbing and stealing from people. And I got an insurance check from an accident. And I remember I'm like holding this $97,000 check, and I give some of it to pay for her funeral expenses and a little bit to her family and a little bit to my family, and then the other $60,000 was gone in 3 months. And I couldn't believe, like, and I wasn't going, like, I wasn't taking trips to Paris, I wasn't, like, going on vacations, it was feeding my habits, whatever they were at the time, my drinking and my drugs. And, I ran through the money, and I didn't know what else to do. I had no plan of, like, what am I going to do now? Like, so I ended up, like, moving into, like, the swap house, and, I knew I could get what I needed there. I knew, it wouldn't be an issue. It was real convenient. The rent was cheap. So I ended up doing that, and I ended up getting a job, and actually a pretty well-paying job. I tried to hold it together for a little while, but, like, I was out of control. And one day I'm leaving work, and I'm driving like I have any other night of the week, just completely loaded. And I end up like falling asleep at the wheel, and I end up wrecking my car and hitting two cars on the side of a 275 and totaling totaling three cars. And I remember I had a bunch of stuff on me at the time, and like my thinking is I'm not gonna get a charge for this. There's no way, and I'm not gonna throw it away. So I'm going to take everything I have on me. And I end up, like, in the hospital unconscious for a few days. And, I didn't call work. You know, my parents couldn't know because, I'm an adult. And they, like, the hospital's not going to notify them. Plus, I didn't really want them knowing. Because it wasn't time for me to stop. And I didn't want any help at that point. I just wanted to keep doing my thing. And, I end up losing my car that day. I end up getting fired from my job, because I no call, no show after 3 days, end up getting kicked out of my house. And my next thought process isn't like, I need help, like, this is crazy, I don't know what else to do. It's, I'll just shack up on some buddies' couches. And, eventually I did that until, like, me stealing from them, they no longer want to have me around. And, then I didn't want to tell people, I didn't have anywhere else to go. So I end up, like, sleeping in a baseball park. I end up sleeping in this little tiny, like, 6x5 foot storage shed at a baseball park in a really crappy neighborhood, a scary neighborhood. And this little shack had no roof on it. And the things I would do on a daily basis to get whatever I needed, it's disgusting to me. I can't believe that's the same person. It's like, I don't know, it's like Joe was saying earlier, like, that blows my mind, that, like, that's the kind of stuff I was resorting to. Like, I'm not that person. The people, you guys that know me, you know I'm not that person, man. It's just when I'm wrapped up in my active alcoholism, when I'm wrapped up in my active addictions, man, who knows, And I don't know, like, right before I came in here, it was Thanksgiving of 2012, and I ended up, like, in a blackout, and my parents had, like, confiscated something. Like, I was at their house, and they had confiscated something from me. And I end up, like, chasing them around the neighborhood in my boxers, and I end up assaulting my mom and my sister in a complete blackout, and I don't have any recollection of it happening. And I wake up in jail the next morning, and, like, all I have is my underwear, and I'm asking what happened. And they told me what I was arrested for, and it was possession charges. And I remember I called my mom, and I said, how could you do this to me? Like, this is going to be on my record. Why didn't you just tell them I hit you, And that's my thought process, man. Selfish, self-centered by nature. I don't want those horrible consequences. I want something less that maybe can be dropped. And I'm living on the streets, man. And I'm doing things like I'm trying to like keep up appearances so people didn't know I was homeless, you know. I would go and I would, you know, any money I would have, first of all, didn't go to food. Like, I would go and get what I needed, and then I would steal anything else, like any kind of food or anything else I could get. So, like, the way I kept up my appearances, I would get, like, soap from a gas station, and I would go to, like, an apartment complex at night, and I would hit the shower on the swimming pool, lather up with soap, jump in the pool, and then run out. And that's how I got clean. You know, it's kind of clever, but, like, that's the kind of stuff I was doing. And like every night I would go to bed and I'd hate myself and I was terrified and I was scared and I was paranoid. And I didn't know what else to do. You know, I'd have a candle in this little place I was sleeping at. And every time, like in the area I was sleeping, helicopters would go over every night. And every time those helicopters went over, I would blow out that candle and I'd curl up in a ball and I'd hide in a corner because I didn't want someone to catch me. And I hated myself. I hated every minute of it. I went to bed saying, you know, I don't, you know, God, if there is a God, you know, don't let me wake up. Just don't let me wake up. I don't want to do this anymore. And I'd wake up the next day and I'd do it all over again, day after day. And it was miserable. And I hated it. And I hated myself. And I didn't know how to stop. I didn't know how to quit. And eventually, like, God intervened, you know, call it God, call it Walmart Asset Protection. You know, I got busted trying to steal some stuff from Walmart and ended up in jail. And I remember I got to jail, and I'm sitting there, and I'm in jail, and I call my parents to tell them what had happened, mostly because I want to get bailed out, right? And so I call them, and I tell them what had happened, and like the weirdest thing, like I got to jail and I was okay. Like I was happy that I was in jail. You know, I had meals that I knew I was going to get fed. I knew I had a roof over my head. I knew no one was coming after me. And I was like okay with being in jail. And here's this like, you know, reasonably smart guy who had a full scholarship to college, every opportunity in the world. And now I'm happy to be in jail. And like at that moment, it was like, what the hell's wrong with me? You know, I can't stop. Like, I can't do this anymore. I don't want to do this anymore. So I call my parents and I call my mom and I ask her for help. And, you know, I had already been arrested 7 times before this. One of the things my dad told me right before I came into this program was an argument we were having. I can't believe how much joy it brings me that every time I Google my last name, your mugshots come up. And, like, I call my mom, and I'm asking her for help, and just like I had so many other times before, I just crush her. You know, I call her and ask her to bail me out, and, you know, I find out that day that her brother and then my dad's sister had died on the same day. And just the amount of pain I knew I had caused my parents again, I hated myself so much. I hated myself, and I didn't know what else to do. And I sat there on that phone. I hung up the phone. I just sat there and I cried with my head in my hands. And I hated myself. I didn't know what else I was gonna do. And eventually, I got out. And you would think after coming to that realization that I can't do this anymore. I need help. My life's out of control. You would think I'd do something different. But I took the first bus out of jail, and I went and I got loaded. And you know, if alcohol and drugs were my only problem, then I, you know, after being sober for a few days, I wouldn't have jumped on that bus and gotten loaded. But that's not it, man. My problem is centered in my thinking and the way I go about my business without a spiritual solution. And so I go and I get loaded and I'm miserable. I can't believe it. I done it again. And I turned myself over to my parents and I said, please just like help me. Like I can't stop. I want to stop. I can't stop. And they checked me into a detox and, you know, I got to the detox and, I didn't, you know, I heard a couple of AA meetings there and I saw the steps and I saw like God all up in the steps. I don't know if you guys realize it, but he's like all up in there. And I saw that. My first impression was like, there's no way. No way. Not for me. Not going to do it. I don't want whatever this is, you know, because there were people like I wasn't relating to them. I didn't want to listen to them. I was so biased by what I saw. I didn't open my ears, and I wasn't open-minded to what was being said. And it's crazy I'm speaking here because these two guys walked in, and these two guys walked into my detox, and they're members of your home group. And, you know, Greg and Andrew walked into my detox, and they told their story. And for some reason, I was listening that day. I could see that they were, like, genuinely friends. I could see that they genuinely cared about each other. They shared their story a little bit, their experiences. And they kind of shared something, like, really heavy that I related to, and how, you know, a group of their friends, like, had their back that day, you know, that day when this guy was going through something. And they were with him the entire time. And he didn't have to pick up a drink. And he didn't have to drink over it. And I saw the relationship that they had. And something about that, man, like, I wanted that more than anything. Because at the end, man, I had no one else. I hated myself. I didn't want to do it anymore. And nobody wanted to be around me. My parents didn't want anything to do with me. And at that moment, like, I was willing to, like, give AA a shot, man. I really believe, man, they opened my eyes that day, and they probably, you know, they saved my ass. So, yeah, that's my mushy-gushy, I love you guys kind of thing. But, yeah, like, they, when they spoke and I got a chance to talk to them, I just realized that they were a couple guys just like me, and they had been through a lot of the same things I had been, and, like, now they didn't have to do that anymore. And that was something I kind of wanted. So, I ended up going to a treatment center. I got on a bus, and thank gosh they picked me up from the detox, because even after saying that, I was making plans to go get loaded again. And they took me to a treatment center. I got to the treatment center, and the treatment center, like, really, really taught me how to be honest, like, with what I was thinking, what I was feeling. It kind of helped me get down to a lot of the root issues, and I have a lot of respect for people that come in here without going through treatment. I think it's amazing. Like, I feel like I absolutely needed to learn how to be honest with myself. And I know, like, working the first step, that's something that anyone can do. But I think it was particularly helpful for me. And I got in there, and they told me, you know, get connected to people in AA, get some phone numbers, get a sponsor. They gave us a big book, and a 12 and 12, and they told me to read every day. And I don't know what it was. It was just, I wanted so bad to, like, not to go back to living the life I was living when I walked in there, that I was just absolute willing to do whatever it took at that minute. And so, like, I kind of, like, took the suggestions that people gave me. And for a while, that sheer desperation of not going back to the life I was living kept me doing everything I was supposed to do. And I got connected to a group of guys, and I took all the suggestions they gave me. And they told me to stay in treatment for, you know, another 30 days. So I ended up staying in treatment for another 30 days, doing 60 days. And they told me to do IOP, intensive outpatient. I did it. And they told me to go to a halfway house. I wanted to go to another halfway house. Because I was terrified of the place they were telling me to go. It was right in the middle of, you know, where I was homeless at. It was right in the same area where I was right before I got in here. And I was so stuck on the people's places and things, and I was terrified that going back to that area meant that I was doomed. And the fact of the matter was, it wasn't about where I was. It was about what I was doing. And so I just stayed connected to a group of guys, and I managed to get in with an amazing group of guys. I managed to get a sponsor that had a lot of the same interest in as me, and I got people's phone numbers, and I called them, on a pretty regular basis, and I tried to stay accountable to them. And like, I started to, like, develop these friendships with people that, you know, normally, I don't think I'd be friends with most of them, honestly. Like, normally, I don't think I'd be friends with most of you guys. But but it's amazing how that works out. And it's amazing, like, how much we really do have in common. It's not just because I'm an alcoholic and you're an alcoholic. It's there's something special going on here. And I don't know how else to describe it. And I don't know that it's anything but God. Whatever God is to me, that is. And so yeah, I took these suggestions, and I did things I didn't always want to do. I didn't want to take, you know, any job that came my way, but I did it, and I did it just because, you know what, my mom wasn't floating a bill for me anymore, and I needed to figure out a way to pay rent. So I talked to my sponsor about it, and he just told me to take the job that was sitting on a table the entire time that I didn't want to do. And I ended up taking it, and it was a crappy, you know, roofing job in the middle of summer in Florida. And I'm a 300-pound, 6'3" man at the time, and, you know, afraid of heights. And I'm roofing in Florida. And it wasn't that bad, man. It was decent. I got a nice tan. I got to lose a few pounds. And I got to be outside all day. And I don't know. Like, I stay, you know, I stay sober, and I kind of hang around you guys, and I kind of do the AA thing for a while. And my eyes open up a little bit, and I appreciate life a little bit more. And I'm, like, I'm able to, like, kind of enjoy the moment a little bit more. And, you know, so I'm taking suggestions, and I'm reaching out to people, and I'm talking to people, and I'm able to, like, kind of start developing these relationships like the guys in the detox were talking about. And, like, I don't know. It's amazing, like, how comfortable I feel with people now, because I never felt that way as a kid, and how comfortable I am with my own, you know, who I am. And ultimately, the real change for me happened, you know, not just from coming around AA, not just from talking to people, not just from coming to meetings. It was through the steps. And, you know, I worked the first step and the second step with my sponsor in treatment, and it was one of those things like, okay, you're in a treatment facility, you know, for alcohol and drug rehabilitation. Obviously, you got a problem, you know, look at your life. Yeah, I got a problem, and my life is shit. And that was kind of like the first step for me. It wasn't real difficult. And I didn't have, like, this hard time accepting that I was an alcoholic. I didn't recognize it anyway, because I just look at the disease of alcoholism as all-encompassing, whether it's addiction, whether it's alcohol. For me, it's the same disease centered in the brain. It's just whatever poison you go to. And so I just, you know, I ended up working the first step, and, like, I was having some trouble with the second step, again, because of my resentment towards God. And and you guys told me, you know, to kind of, like, take it easy, and you told me, like, I didn't have to, like, pinpoint my God, like, as long as I was willing to believe. And so I kind of prayed for the willingness, and you know, my conception of God has kind of changed as I've been here. And I got to my sponsor's house, and we did a third step, and I'm on my knees with another man, and it's real weird. And you know what, though, like, I don't know sometimes too much what God's will is for me, but it's like my sponsor said, it's, you know, I'm pretty sure God's will is not for me to drink. So that was kind of a good place for me to start. And and then, like, praying and talking to other people, and kind of letting you guys show me the way and show me, like, what I should be doing. And then the 4 through 9, like, that's when I got all that, you know, junk that was in my past out of the way, and, like, I really felt connected to you guys. I really felt, like, kind of part of AA. And, you know, all the things that were running my life up to that point turned back around on me. And it made a lot more palatable that it wasn't all these other things, that it was just me. And that's a lot more manageable, that it's just me that needs help, than the rest of the world. And as much as I learned about myself working through the steps with a sponsor, I've learned quite a bit about myself working through the steps with a sponsee. Because for me, like, that's when a lot of my character defects really started coming out. And a lot of the ways, like, I kind of, like, go about on a day-to-day basis. Like, it's funny, I can be talking to someone that wants help, and I can offer them help, but I can't take my own suggestion. I can't take my own help. And if I'm telling them to do something that I'm not willing to do myself, then I feel like a hypocrite, you know? And I feel like, all right, well, maybe I need to be doing something else different. And it's just the way it works, man. It's just one alcoholic helping another. And the whole Dr. Bob's last message, love and tolerance, I'm pretty good about the love part. Like, I love all you guys. I love people. Tolerance is something I'm continuously working on. And I don't know. Like, I don't know where I'd be today without Alcoholics Anonymous, without this program, without you people, without God. But it doesn't matter. Like, I'm here. I'm here now, and I'm pretty happy. I'm pretty content on a day-to-day basis. And I don't have all the material possessions in the world. And I don't have everything I want. But I'll take, you know, moments of serenity and personal contentness over the life I was living before any day of the week, man. The relationships I have with people now are more amazing than I could ever have dreamed of. The amount of people I call friends, the amount of people I have in my life, and that would do anything for me, and I would do anything for them. That's, like, to me, that's, like, always kind of been the thing that got me here and kept me here, I think is what it comes down to. And, you know, it's amazing now that I don't resent God, and I can say God, and, like, mean it, and say that I'm grateful to God. And I can actually pray, and I can actually mean what I'm saying. So yeah, I really appreciate you guys allowing me the opportunity to speak here. Thank you guys very much for my sobriety.